Hello, I'm Dawn Durham, and welcome to Patent Pod. A key predictor for academic success is a student's engagement in the learning. Having our students engaged and participating in their daily learning is a key component of a successful classroom. Dr. Anita Archer is joining us today via Zoom. Dr. Archer, thank you for taking time to talk with us about why it is important for students to be active participants in our classroom. You exemplify the craft of teaching, so having you here to share your insight on active participation will be beneficial for instructional leaders and practitioners in the field. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It is an honor to be here with Patent Podcasts.
Thank you. So I want to start off, just to kind of give us a framework of what we're talking about, I want to start with the importance of active participation. Why is it important for our students to be actively engaged and be a participant in the learner for our classrooms to be successful?
You know, of all of the attributes of effective teaching, I would put active participation as number one because of what it does in the classroom. And when I go into classrooms where it is truly interactive, I say something, you say something, I write something, you write something, I do something, you do something, here's what I see. First of all, it creates a much more positive learning environment. The students are engaged. The students feel accountable for being present. The students have more appropriate behavior. And there is more teacher-student interaction, thus better sister-student relationship. The students have to participate if we are going to anticipate learning. So the first big benefit and reason why the classes should be interactive is all about the environment within the classroom that students are participating in. Number two, and I just finished reading a new book by Daniel William on creating the schools that our children need. And he put embedded informative assessment as a number one attribute of great teachers in terms of their teaching, and said this, that the embedded formative assessment needs to be moment to moment, minute to minute within the instruction. Write that problem down, show me your whiteboard, I give you feedback on it, I adjust my lesson, oh, we need one more practice of that. I am teaching a lesson, tell your partner this answer, I move around the room and monitor, I find there's a misconception, I correct that misconception, we practice the correct information. Without getting constant student responses, how is the teacher to monitor and adjust their lesson? It has to occur minute to minute, second to second. I am asking you to respond so I get information on my own teaching. So environment in the classroom, and number two is the opportunity for embedded formative assessment, not just 2 weeks later as we do Ames Webb or Dibbles Kids, but right there at that moment, changing the instruction. And third, and the most important reason we do everything is learning. That learning requires that I rehearse information. It requires that I retrieve information. It requires that I practice information. That without that rehearsal, retrieval, and practice, learning won't occur. And I was just reading another book that I highly recommend, which was recommended by a person in Pennsylvania to me, The Hidden Lives of Learners. The Hidden Lives of Learners. And in this book, they talk about the fact that students need three total repetitions of information in order for it to become moved from short-term memory to long-term memory. And so that's another reason that we do active participation. Now, one of their examples was learning just one simple thing, that Antarctica has very little precipitation and is basically defined as a desert. And they found that the students needed 3 repetitions of that information, maybe once where the teacher's presenting it, once they read it, once they explain it to their partner, in order for it to move from short-term to long-term memory. And that long-term memory is learning. Mm-hmm. So we do need that kind of rehearsal for that to occur. So to me, those are the 3 biggies, why active participation makes a difference. But I also find that it's transformative in terms of our teaching. I have to be prepared to have active participation. I have to know where I am going. I have to know where we start and what our goal is in terms of our learning intentions, and this helps me out. So I look at it that way as absolutely central to what we do in the classroom. And I'm not just talking elementary. When I visit high schools, I say to myself, oh my goodness, some classrooms I've seen have no active participation, lecturing. And that is not only not establishing a teacher-student relationship, but is not establishing what our job is, which is learning. So I celebrate every time I go into a classroom and I see the interactive nature of instruction. Like a really good conversation, it's interactive.
So you said a couple things there, and I want to highlight a few of them because they're worth repeating and worth summarizing a little bit for our listeners. We talked about that being actively engaged with our students increases the relationship between the adult and the student in the classroom, which of course is going to have an impact on the outcome, ultimate outcome, which is learning. We talked about creating that positive learning environment. We talked about decreasing off-task behavior and increasing on-task behavior, which every mm-hmm. educator in the world wants to increase on-task behavior, decrease off-task behavior. You also talked about that idea of rehearse, retain, and practice. So that idea of let's rehearse this, let's pull it out of our memory so we can get to it again, and let's practice this so we can make sure that it's embedded in our long-term memory. Those are some key aspects of why active participation is so important. And I'm thank you for mentioning not just the elementary classroom, and you talked about high school. I would go even farther to say adult learning. You know, those Absolutely. Of us at Patton who do the consulting and we train teachers all day long, they also need to be active participants. We are really to model what we want them to do in their classroom. If we want our students from K to 12 to be actively engaged and be participants in our learning, then we need to ask the same thing of the educators as well.
So our interaction here actually would illustrate the 3 repetitions of critical information. I said it, I reviewed it, you reviewed it again. That's like perfect. So it's what teachers need to do, and that occurs through active participation.
I think that leads us right into the next topic I want to talk to you about. I've heard you say that active participation makes the learning visible. So talk to me about this. How is engaging my students in an active participation technique allowing me as the teacher in the classroom to see learning going on?
Well, it is only through active participation that we see learning going on. If I say, think about this or listen to my lecture, how do we know that anything is happening within the student? If I say, watch me do this problem, in math, let me now use this word problem and guide you through it. Now you do it, maybe even on a whiteboard, and show me. Now I know, did you get it or not? And thus I can adjust my instruction. And so when I have you say an answer to a partner, and the partner mirrors back what you said, and then I have you stand and deliver and tell the class again, I can tell if you have it or if you don't have it. And so this, everything that we do, you read a passage, you write a summary of it. Did you pick out the most important ideas? How am I to know what you learned from that passage if I don't have some active participation response, some embedded active participation? So it is the key to making learning visible, because upon that, we give feedback. Upon that, we give corrections. Upon that, we give praise. Upon that, we adjust our lesson. Upon that, we plan our next lesson. But it's all about seeing what they've learned. And I do think, Dawn, that is one of the challenges, is that I see many times teachers are focused on getting through an activity, but not focused on the big idea of this is what I want them to learn. Are they learning it? And do they demonstrate that they've learned it through their responses? And so it's a movement away from just focused on getting through the activity and a focus on what's really important, learning, that then I can celebrate and you can celebrate and the students can celebrate learning. And that is the glory of what we do, is we are teachers and our job is to ensure learning. And so without seeing it, whether it's they vocalize it or they write it or they act it out or they summarize it, we have to see learning has occurred. And isn't that the human nature? We want to learn. Up to the last moment of our life, we want to learn. And so I think that it is the way we make learning visible so we can respond to it.
We need to keep remembering the ultimate outcome is not to finish the lesson, but the outcome is the learning. And we always have to keep that in mind. And you're right, being able to see the learning is certainly a way for us to remember. It's about what the kids walk away with, what they take with them when they leave that classroom versus did I get through 1 through 10 on the lesson plan that looks so impeccable on paper? Absolutely.
Right. And so even things such as exit tickets is one example of checking their understanding, checking for learning, which is a type of active participation.
And we talked about this already, but we talked about formative assessment and how active participation is really embedding formative assessment. Why is formative assessment so important for us to do? And I think you alluded to it a little bit when you had said, you know, this is our way of adjusting our lessons, knowing who got it, who didn't get it, where we need to go. But expand on that a little bit for me. And when we say that we're embedding formative assessment within the active participation, how is having students engaged really knowing that I can get an assessment out of that piece?
So active participation has one of its goals is to be formative assessment, intentionally informative assessment. So I am teaching, let's take a math lesson. I'm teaching a math lesson and we have a new algorithm and I model it and I do it. And then I guide you in doing it. We do it, 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 we do it. And then I have a you do it, a checking for understanding, which would be ultimate embedded formative assessment. So I'm looking to see if you have that, if we can move to independent work, or do I need to go back to more guided practice beforehand? So that would be a perfect example of very intentional embedded formative assessment. We are reading a passage and our goal is to figure out what the theme of the passage is. And we use a strategy such as two statements and two questions, or two questions, two statements. Was what happened good or bad? Why was it good or bad? What did the author want the character to learn? And what did we learn? And so then we fill that in and we come up with the theme. And so my goal is to use that as a way of measuring, are they learning how to figure out the theme for a story? And so it is that process of I am teaching information, I'm having you then use the information, I'm using that response to make a decision. Do I go forward? Do I have more repetitions? Do I go back? Do I have to repeat it? It is being very present in not just getting through the examples, but asking the constant question of, are they learning?
So we're keeping that outcome on learning, and we're also making our activities in the classroom, our engagement, our process very purposeful, is what I hear you're saying. Very targeted, very intentional.
Very intentional.
Excellent.
Now, and some types of active participation are better for embedded formative assessment than others. Okay. For example, if I have you write on a whiteboard and everybody shows me and I can watch everybody's answers, well, in terms of embedded formative assessment, that's going to make a difference in my teaching, would even be better than having them write it on paper, which I could look at like 2 or 3 or 4 people, but not get the totality. Asking questions on vocabulary and having them write down what word I'm thinking of versus having them look at a list and say, oh, it's number 5, and I'll use a hand signal to show it. So there's some types of active participation that even gives the teacher better information in terms of the student's understanding. So I'm always looking for that to embed. Doesn't have to be every aspect of active participation, but some very intentional ways to do that.
Now, I want to pivot for a minute. Now that we understand why we need to be thinking about active participation and why it's so important to create a successful classroom and successful learning for our students, let's talk about some strategies, techniques, activities that are actively participating our students in the learning. Could you help us with those?
So I'll give you my short list, because there are, of course, many, many different ways to have students respond. And they're either going to respond verbally, or they're going to respond in writing, or they're going to respond with some kind of action. And so those are the categories. And there's many authors who contribute active participation strategies to this, but my short list. In terms of verbal responses, one would be to have everyone say answers together. And that would be mostly purposeful in terms of practice more than anything else. And so I am teaching little people, and I say, this letter is the letter M. Its sound is mmm. Everybody say it, mmm. And that's active participation for the purpose of practice. Okay? But it could be the purpose of quick review. I could be a middle school language arts teacher and say, students, let's do a quick review of concepts we've learned. When the author gives us a hint about what will happen later, what do we call that? And everybody says foreshadowing. So that would be practice, but also I could listen carefully to see if they are firm on that concept or not. So core responses, I'm always looking for active participation that promotes learning, that promotes embedded formative assessment, and has equity. Everybody is actively involved, not just calling on students to raise their hands. In fact, that needs to be one thing that we sort of eradicate from our repertoire, because the highest performing kids, the students that are most assertive, the students that are most proficient in English, they're the ones who are going to raise their hands. And I want everybody to practice. Those gifted kids need lots of practice too. And so they're going to get it when I involve everyone. So that would be one, would be using core response. And the only problem there is random shout outs, where you just allow kids to shout out answers, actually has a negative effect on achievement. Why? Because the students simply mimic the highest performing, most assertive kid. So they're not thinking themselves. So you have to be like the band director. If you want beautiful music, you direct the kids. If you want beautiful music in choral responses, you direct the kids. Some kind of cue. It doesn't matter what you use. I go think and say, perfect. But I've had teachers take something like this and go thinking, now thinking, perfect, choral responses. And then I would definitely, within this short list of powerful things to do, I would always assign children partners and change them at least every 3 weeks, 3 to 6 weeks in the research, but I probably do it about every 3 weeks, and assign them a partner in some designation, like a 1 or a 2, so I can direct them. But there's so many times, particularly in things like social studies and science and reading instruction, where I really want collaborative conversations. I want them to share answers with partners. And so we've read something, or I've explained something, and I say ones, answer this question, and twos, respond back to them. Or for this concept, ones, give your partner an example. Twos, give your partner a non-example of the concept. And it's such a rich thing, but also we know the power of children connecting to their peers. Mm-hmm. But like choral responses, it has to be structured. It's not just like, oh, turn and talk, oh, woo, woo, turn and talk. It has to be, now you're giggling, but it's true, because there's so many things they could be discussing. Mm-hmm. So you give them a question, and then You might even give them a sentence starter structure and then have one say the answer, but also have a job for the second partner. So partners would be the second thing I'd add to any teacher's repertoire. Third, sometimes you want to call on individuals, but you're not going to have them raise their hands because the highest performing students will get all of the practice. Mm-hmm. So you need some kind of system for randomly calling on children. I mean, you can use, you know, some old things are like very good things and like the old sticks in a can. It works. You pull the name and you call in that child. And then you put the name back in the can. Or you get your iPhone out. I think my iPhone is somewhere here. Yes. And you get an app on it. And you touch it and the name comes up. An app like Teachers Pick or Pick Me to call them randomly. So core responses, partner responses, individual responses, where you have a system for calling on them. The next area is what I often refer to as holdups, because holdups would be things such as you've written on a whiteboard or a virtual whiteboard, like a plastic container with a lined paper on it, and you've written on that, and you hold it up. I've even now seen classes that have Chromebooks, and they can make those into virtual whiteboards and hold them up. And the benefit is I can hold everybody accountable. When they write on paper, the kid in the far corner sometimes says to themselves, "Woo, she will never know that I didn't write it down." But now I hold them accountable, and I can monitor everyone. Similar, I could have response cards where they held up a response card in response to a question. It could be generic, yes, no, true, false. It could be specific. Everybody is holding it up. I can hold everybody accountable. Most often, you have to follow those up with, why did you pick that answer? Which could be a collaborative conversation. The third hold up would be something that's numbered on the screen, and the students would show the corresponding number to the answer they chose. So I like holdups because for embedded formative assessment, I can check out everyone. Everybody holds up their whiteboard. Everybody holds up the response card. Everybody shows me their fingers. But then, of course, there's technological things that do that same thing. Mm-hmm. Like you could use clickers, or you could use some kind of clicker to put in answers and hold everybody accountable. So then I have written responses. Now, written responses have a challenge in that when they're written down on just paper, you can't monitor everybody in the moment. Mm-hmm. But we need to have kids write more. So giving them sentence starters, having them complete it, having them have writing frames that they complete work very well. So my short list, because I don't think we need a lot, we need a short list we use consistently. Choral responses, partner responses, individual, random, but not hand raising, and holdups. I would do my short list.
So but all about, of them, oh, please go ahead.
All of them have some consistency. Everyone does it. Everyone can be held accountable. Every one of those would give me feedback as a teacher what I need to do and adjust my lesson. So they all serve the purposes of active participation.
So we talked about those three categories. You can have students verbally respond in writing, or respond by doing an action. But again, you'd said it was purposeful. You have to think about what's your purpose. What is it you want them to be doing? Do you want them to be practicing? Do you want them to be rehearsing? Do you want them to be pulling out information from their long-term memory? That really determines what strategy or technique that you're using for your active participation. And it comes to that very planned piece, very intentional, very targeted thought through process that an educator has to go through before they can just say, oh, okay, we'll just have everybody turn around to a partner and talk. And there is something you mentioned there about the raising of the hand of individual students. You know, we get asked this a lot. It's okay to have individual students answer questions as long as it's systematic, as you had said. There is this randomization because, you had mentioned it. Statistically speaking, we know that it's the same kids in a classroom of 30 kids, the same six will get called on again and again and again. And, you know, little Johnny, who's sitting over in the corner, figures that pattern out and says, well, I can just sit back because she's not calling on me, right?
So lack of equity. You want everybody involved from the first day of school. From the very first day of school, active participation has to occur. So you're absolutely right. It has to be extraordinarily intentional. In fact, when I work with teachers, and I just did this last week, who had a new curriculum, and the new curriculum was very systematic, very well designed, except it didn't have active participation. So we sat down and said, here we could get a core response. We're going to put in a symbol for that. Here we could have the kids say an answer to a partner, but we're going to have the second partner say this. Here we could not call on an individual student as recommended in the book. We could rather have us all read it together or use close reading. I read stop and you say the next word, or I have them read it to their partner. Again, getting everyone involved. But annotating our teacher's manuals, we have found as the best way to increase active participation, where we actually take that and put in, okay, at this point, partner, here a core response. Here, this will be best if we get on our whiteboards every day for this section of the lesson. And so that it's very intentional. It is not just at random. It's intentional. And if we do it again and again and again as teachers, then we become much more automatic at it. It's just like learning anything else, that we have to move it from short-term memory to long-term memory so that we are automatic in terms of active participation. But it makes it so much more fun for everybody, for the kids, for the teacher, just plain more delightful because it is an interpersonal, a human interaction. And so it not only increases learning, but it increases the relationship of all the people, all the members of the community, the kids, the teachers, the paraeducators that are present.
So when we said that planning, planning the active participation in your text, in your teacher's manual, you know, that can be done as a grade level team, not just as an individual teacher sitting there, but as a grade level team. That's a great use of our time, whether it be at faculty meetings or professional development days. That's a very good use for instructional leaders to kind of build that time in for collaborative active participation planning for their educators, for the classroom teachers.
I would suggest that it would be the most useful time. For all the fourth grade teachers or all of the middle school science teachers with their textbook open, ask that question. Because it is usually not embedded in our curriculum materials, and yet it is what we have to design so that those curriculum materials make a big difference. I will mention that in Dylan Williams' most recent book, one of the things he said is, he promoted use of textbooks, that teachers need tools to teach by. They shouldn't have to investigate and go to teachers, pay teachers, and make up their own curriculum, so that we have a common curriculum that in the research actually supports the highest teachers in terms of achievement, as well as the teachers who really need support. So this would be a very good activity for PLCs on a consistent basis. We're going to a new unit. Let's look at the active participation. Yes, would increase the learning for all kids at the school site.
And this is a great time of year to be talking about that, because the school year, at least out in Pennsylvania here, the school year has either just started last week or is about to start next week. So this is a great time to be kind of collaboratively looking at that and saying, you know, this is something we want to implement. We want to be looking at active participation. We want our learners to be engaged so that our outcome of learning is that much more successful. So now's the time of year for teachers and partners to be doing this kind of work.
Right. And it makes a difference. And so we don't mind as teachers putting time into things that make a difference. Make a difference in student learning, make our jobs go more smoothly, make the time fly by in the classroom. I always didn't mention that before, but I think that is something that occurs. Because when I do presentations, people say, oh, I'm just so surprised the day is done. Because, I mean, I was so involved and was so involved the whole time that, oh, my goodness, it's over. So, yes, this would be on my top of the list of things to do at a school to make a difference, is really explore, really commit to, do walkthroughs based on it, do PLCs based on it, and have it in your classroom, because active participation carries everything else we know with it.
Well, thank you. That I'm glad we ended on that note, because that certainly is a key piece for where we should be heading with our strategies and techniques for this school year. And we know with starting this new year that actively engaging our students and having them be participants rather than spectators in the learning will allow for more engagement, increased academic achievement, increased on-task behavior, and decreased off-task behavior. Absolutely. Dr. Archer, thank you so much for joining us today and to helping explain why active participation should be the norm in our classrooms. We very much appreciate your thoughts and your insights into this topic. Now, I have to ask you, you know, at Patent, we really strive to help professionals grow in a professional manner, you know, them growing as learners themselves. Is there any advice that you could offer to the practitioners in the field who are listening to help them grow professionally?
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm struck by is how the craft and science of teaching, that we can all get better every single year. The teacher has the most teaching behaviors in their repertoire can still add to it. And that has to be our pursuit as teachers. Not only are we creating lifelong learners, we must be that. We must constantly ask ourselves, what can I do that will make the most difference? And I think we're totally blessed to be in the profession that makes the most difference of any profession I can think of in the lives of the humans that we get to work with. So just constantly saying, ooh, what can I add to my repertoire that's going to make a difference for the children that I get to serve?
Lifelong learning. That's wonderful advice, and we so very much appreciate it from you, Dr. Archer. Thank you.
Thank you,
Dawn. To all of you in the field. You truly inspire educational growth within your students every day. A special thank you to John Ragsdale for producing this podcast. We'll see you next time on Patent Pod.
Thank you.